Alright, what's good? Laugh now, die later. Way over the 100th episode at this point by the time you're listening. Thank you everybody for tuning in. For context, I'm about to hit the 100th episode at the time of recording, and I'm stoked. At first I was like, it's a big deal, but I'm like, it's a big deal, but like, in just to me, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I guess, but it's queer, that's crazy. I'm like, 100 episodes.
That's nuts.
Realistically, I have more than 100 episodes, because there's like some episodes I never release. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, that's crazy. And like, I've only done like 5 online. So like, at least minimum of 95 episodes out there.
That are all in person.
I've gone to someone's house. Or met someone, which I look back, I'm like, that's crazy.
It's a lot of work.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is a lot. Like, I think Nate Zabala asked me, he's like, why are you still, like, because I interviewed him he was like my 5th guest.
Yeah.
And then he asked me, he's like, why are you still on the phone? I'm like, I want, like, and I think I go back to, like, what Alexander Spitz said. I'm like, he's like, what's the least amount of fans I could have and make this work? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like, and I was like, and like, I mean, I've always felt that way, but I didn't realize until he said it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, enough about me.
No. Yeah. I think that's cool. Like, I don't like doing a... Zoom interviews at all, you know.
You did one, right, with so you did a thing, right?
We did I think we did that, yeah, but that's like, that's Zed.
This is homies talking.
Yeah, I mean, that was, but it's funny because that one that we did, we actually did it one time. We did the entire episode like 3 hours or something, and then threw it out because it was bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Why was it bad?
Because there was we tried to do it with 3 people instead of 2, and it was just, the chemistry was weird, because, you know, when 3 people are all on Zoom, you're kind of like, everyone's waiting for someone else to say something or whatever, and it, you know, if you're trying to joke around and be, I mean, it's ironic because it's like the thing was 3 friends who are in a group chat and talk all day and stuff like that, so you would think that the chemistry would be really good, but yeah. Like when you put it on a Zoom, it was horrible, it wasn't good at all, so we just decided to do it again with the 2 of us. But I tried to get Zed to do it in person, because like I hang out with him all the time, we're gonna go to the movies tonight.
Oh, sick.
But he refused to do it, like, he didn't want to do it
in person.
He didn't want to do it in person. Yeah.
Has he done any in person?
Yeah,
a few that I like. I don't listen to podcasts, funny enough. But
yeah,
like he's one of the few that I'm like, oh, this is like, it's like, I don't know if it's a, like, maybe because you guys are friends, but like, he's also pretty sarcastic.
He's very, yeah. I mean, he's always doing a bit, no matter what.
Yeah,
like, in public or you know, with friends or without friends, you know.
The first episode of Ross, I was confused. I was like, what's going on? I was like,
listen to one with Ross?
Yeah, the first one, the very first one.
Yeah. Well, they have like their own relationship.
Yeah. You know? And I didn't know that until like, I was like, oh, until like 40 minutes in, I was like, oh, okay, never mind. I was like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't like Damien from Fucked Up has asked me to do his podcast like ever since he started it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I refuse to do it over the phone. Like, I just want to do it in person because I just feel like it's...
He's really good.
I mean, yeah.
He's good. Like, for, like, because I feel like people don't realize that doing it, I feel like, in my opinion, mm-hmm. doing it in person is way easier because you just go based off, like, when I've done interviews online, and I go back to what, like, done release episodes, most of them are online because mm-hmm. it's so, like, at least for me, the way I'm used to it, it's like, it's so bad when I do it online because it's so, it's just bad.
It's not ideal, you know?
Yeah.
You want someone to, I understand, like, especially with Damien, you know, he has the ability to get so many people that he wouldn't be able to see mm-hmm. otherwise. So, like, I understand the utility of it. And also, like, if you're a journalist, like, you do almost everything on the phone, you know? So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, I get it. But, like, for something like this, I just, I don't know. I prefer to, like, be in the same room with someone if I can.
Are you a shy person?
Yes.
Are you reclusive?
Sort of. I think it's, like, I'm kind of both. You know, like... I think that there's a definite contradiction there, which is like that I I am like kind of shy and don't be, I don't like being looked at or, and you know, I love the obfuscation of like being in a band. Like I would never want to play solo or something, you know, for, cause I don't like being the focal
point.
Or never
front a band.
Yeah, I've never fronted a band.
And you will never front a band.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think I would.
How old are you, my man?
I'm 42, 41.
42, 41. So you're born in
81.
So you're kind of old school.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you have a little bit, you're a little like, you have a little bit of the old school mentality, if that makes sense.
I would say I have a lot of the old school mentality.
Really?
Well, in certain ways, yeah. Not in every way. Not in the way that...
No, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would like to think that I have a lot of the positive ones and not, not the negative ones.
I was talking to my mom the other day. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, actually yesterday. Yeah. She's born, I think. She's the same age as you.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So when she was, like, one thing we were like, I'm like, I was, because she has a lot of old school, like the bad mentality. And then she was like, and I was like, I was explaining to her, I was like, do you ever realize, like, if I have kids, like, a lot of those mentalities are going to be gone. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I were to have kids, like, are you like, do you ever think about it? Or are you afraid that those things are going to, like, things are going to change, you know, with every generation.
Of course,
things are going to change. And she's like, but like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, you're born in the 80s. Like, you're not old, but you, like, think like you're, like, I don't know. I feel like the 80s were, like, such a time where, I was, like, this is right now, Tom. Mm-hmm. Like, the guy from Depeche Mode.
Yeah.
He's, like, he was, like, freaking the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the way they dressed, the music, it was so, like, exotic.
Yeah.
And that guy died of, like, just old age. Mm-hmm. Like, that life, or what's it called, the lifespan, or mm-hmm. Like, before it was drugs, suicide, depression, like, all killing, like, what he considered a freak.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like, damn, the freak has had its own, what's it called, life cycle.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Which is crazy. This is the first time, you know what I mean? We're just getting to that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild. It was very, even, like, I feel like I got, like, sort of the last echoes of that, you know? Like, as a young person, but now, obviously, like...
Even hardcore, like, you come from an era where it's, like, it was crazy. You know what I mean? Where, like, Sound of Fury now is, like, outdoors, two stages, like... You know what I mean? Like, you come from an era where, like, I'm assuming, or just, like, from what I've gathered, that doesn't happen.
No, I mean, like, the idea of, like, the modern idea of, like, what a... Even, like, a punk or hardcore festival was, like, didn't exist when I first started going to shows. Like, I started going to shows when I was, a teenager... I was into music like from basically birth, in terms of like punk and hardcore stuff, like what people like the way people engage with it now is really different. But it's, you know, it's cool. Obviously, that's like one of the ways I feel like I'm not like in the negative old school way. Like I there are a lot of things about now that are like way better than they were back then, and also like just in terms of like. Stuff like violence at shows or like the, you know, the makeup of like a crowd at a show is, you know.
Usually I go in order these interviews, but I really want to ask now that you're saying this.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Ceremony was a very, you've been in ceremony since the get-go, right?
But no, I joined in 2010, 2011. Okay. Like right after Runner Park came out.
That's still early-ish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Still, I mean, that's, I feel like in my opinion, and I quote someone, I'm not saying, but 2013 was the last. Like, after 2013, things kind of starting to drift into what we are now.
Okay. Why do you think that year?
I didn't say that. So, someone else. A homie, older homie, who's Big Ben. I don't want to say just because people are going to quote him, but he's like, after 2013, like, the, like, pure violence era of, like, or just, like, I guess, I don't want to say anything because I'm not from that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But just, like, the crazier side of it. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of... That's when things started drifting to what we are now. Would you agree, or would you say a little bit later, a little bit earlier?
Well, I don't know. I think it's hard to say because things are, it's so, especially now, it's so big and people's experiences are so subjective.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. I mean, I know that like I'm from Philadelphia, and that's where I started, you know, doing everything and going to shows in the 90s and then into the early 2000s. Like it was. You know, like violence at a show was like, and you know, it was very like white macho violence, you know, it wasn't, you know, was just like a sort of inextricable part of like going to show. You just had to deal with it. I think that it kind of changed in my, probably earlier than 2013, I would say. Yeah, for me anyway. But I also don't know. I mean, it just depends, I think, on what kinds of gigs you're going to. And
well, you're older than the person I asked. So yeah. You probably have been around longer, so you probably even saw,
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, because, you know, the way, in talking about, like, life cycles and lifespans, like, I was talking to someone recently about, like, how punk years are kind of like dog years, where, like, you know, if you're, you know, if you've been going to shows for like 10 years, that's like 70 years or something like that. So, you know, if you were going to shows in the 80s, like, you, what you think of as like a crazy show or like a violent show is like so different than what I thought it was in like 1996 or whatever, you know? So, cause like in Philly we had like there were like skinheads and there were like, but it was like, it wasn't at every show and it was like, it was weird if they were there and if something like that happened.
Really, to me, in my head, of Philly like sounds scary. Like if you're telling me I went to shows in Philly in the 90s, like that sounds scary.
It was, but like, I don't know. It was also just so exciting. Like, you just, it didn't matter, you know?
Back I mean, probably because you're going at the time.
And I was like, 15, yeah, I didn't know, you know? Yeah. And it was like, it was, in a lot of ways, it was really terrifying, but like, it was also so exhilarating that, you know, it just, it was like, to me, it was no question. Like I have to be at the, I have to go to the show. You know what I mean?
Let me give you a proper intro and then we'll go back.
Sure.
Just because it's like, that's so much that.
Yeah.
All right. My guest today is Andy Nelson. You prefer Andy or Andrew?
Andy's good.
Andy.
Yeah.
Andy Nelson, Open City, Painted Black, later on Blacklisted, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, briefly.
That's crazy. That's like, and a band you may or may not heard of, or may not, you know, like Ceremony. You're like the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of someone, but like, you're like, you got hired to like, cause now that I'm, you joined Ceremony 2010.
Mm-hmm.
You joined Blacklisted. I'm like, dang, you joined like the two of the coolest bands of that era. Like, I was like, that's crazy. Like, it's like, I know most people are thinking like, oh, we just joined it later. I'm like, dude, that's crazy that they were thinking of you to be like, yo, we gotta get Andy on that. Like, that sounds crazy. Like,
well, yeah, hopefully they some people might regret
what, what's some of your earlier bands?
I haven't really done that many bands, to be honest. I played in a band in high school that was sort of like a, with my two friends Josh and Jeff. There was just like a kind of like a goofy power violence band called Affirmative Action Jackson, which I wouldn't recommend anyone like checking it. Like, the recordings aren't good, but you know,
it's
like
too.
Is it?
I don't know. I'm asking.
Like, I don't think so. I don't think anyone cares about it at all. So like, that's why I said.
I'm trying to find it.
I'm sure if you're good at the internet, you can find it. But it was like not anything that I'm not like embarrassed by it. But I also don't like rep it because it was very much like what you do in high school, like, you know, go to your friend's parents' basement on the weekend and like bang out some stupid songs. And but we actually we played a lot. Like, we made it pretty far out of town and played some pretty crazy shows and stuff. Like we played with Celtic Frost once. Like, we played with like Converge and American Nightmare and Melt Banana and I don't even know who.
We played
with like Tear It Up and I don't even remember who else, but like, yeah, but it was more by nature of us just like being around, you know, like.
Okay.
But I'm trying to think of who. But yeah, we played a lot, but we never really did much. Like, there's not a record or anything. There's just like there's just some tapes and stuff like that.
I like how you add the Jackson at the end. I was like, Affirmative Action, but then like Affirmative Action Jackson.
Well, there's like Action Jackson. I guess is like an action movie in the. Or it's like an action figure. So I don't know. I didn't come up with the name, but like it was a when we were 15, it was seemed clever.
Affirmative Action sounds like beatdown, but then the Jackson sounds power violence.
Yeah. Well, the name is incredibly like everything about it is incredibly like, you know, of the time, which is like 1997. But yeah. Enough about that. That's not that important. But yeah, the first real band I ever did was Painted Black, and which. I started with Dan Yeaman in like 2001 or 2 or something like that.
Also, it's been around for a long time.
Yeah, we're about to hit our like 20th anniversary or something. But yeah, Yeaman from he was in Lifetime and Kid Dynamite too, and he had seen Affirmative Action Jackson play and thought we were great. So I heard that he had wanted to start like a fast the word was going around town that he wanted to do a thrash band. And at the time I was like, that sounds great. But, you know, I was a Lifetime fan and a Kid Dynamite fan. So I was like, oh, that dude wants to do a thrash band? Like, and I was like, I was 20. So I like, I had a lot of like chutzpah. And I just like, was like, hey man, I emailed him. I was like, yo, do you want to jam? And he was down. So, yeah, 20 years later, we're still doing it. There's like a new record coming out this year and everything. So, but yeah, I never really like, it's funny cause you know, like so many people that I play music with have been in like 100 bands and I've done like probably less than 10, I think.
That's overall. Not a lot.
I guess so. But yeah, I filled in here and there like for things, but you know, I played in, there's a straight edge band from Philly called I Hate You. You ever hear them?
Yeah, I've heard the name.
Yeah, they're great, and I played a show or two, and I Hate You, and I played.
Why are you the fill-in guy? Or like, why are you like, we'll bring you on? Like, why do people like are like have so much confidence to be like, we'll bring this guy in the band?
I don't know, because I must be kind of annoying to be around. Like it's the obvious answer is sort of like. Well, I must be that I'm around and I must be fun to hang out with on some level, or at least that's what people think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Blacklisted thing was like Paint of Black and Blacklisted played together a lot. And one of them was having a baby and couldn't do a tour or couldn't finish a tour actually. And so they were just like, hey, do you want to just do the second half of this tour when Bean goes home to have a baby? And I said, sure, sounds great. And that was the Have Heart Blacklisted Ceremony letdown tour. Uh-huh. that now is like pretty famous, I guess. And
why is it famous?
Just because it's like, well, I think in light of the fact that Have Heart played the biggest hardcore show of all time a few years ago, and you know, I think those three bands playing together and do like that tour was huge. It was like I don't know, like full US, like 6 weeks probably, and just played everywhere. And yeah, I don't know, I guess people like look back on that as like a like an important thing.
I guess crazy that happened.
Yeah. But all three bands were just really tight, that also kind of like, I guess, I don't know, I got along really well with all the Ceremony guys, and Painted Black played with Ceremony a lot around the same time. So it was kind of the same thing where I guess in the case of both bands, I think we like saw the world the same way and had a lot of the same taste in music and the same, like I'm good at touring, you know, like I'm good, I can drive, you know, I'm straight edge, you know, I'm sort of responsible. And I can play guitar and I can play bass and I can, you know, So I think maybe that has something to do with it. But yeah, at the time, I mean, I think it was like, not to get too digressive about it, but like, you know, I was so, like really impressed with what Blacklisted were doing artistically at the time. Cause they had, you know, they had gone from, I don't know how familiar you are with like all their records, but like they, you
the
know,
world goes round.
Yeah, I mean, in a short period of time, really evolved a lot. Yeah. And I thought that was, like, so exciting. Like, I was just a huge fan.
They're, like, on the spin kick realm? Like not like, straight up, but, like, mm-hmm. I could see, like, you know, like, those dudes kind of, like, mosh hard.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, they went, like, they're the only band that I guess, the heaviest band that I know that is not punk or punk-leaning that mm-hmm. just went straight up, like Nirvana.
Yeah. Some of the stuff sounded a lot like Nirvana, who I loved. Like that was a important band for me when I was like a little kid.
Yeah.
And we were all the same age, so yeah, like all the BL guys, and he had similar frames of reference and stuff. But yeah, I mean, you know, when they came out, I didn't really, and I like I don't even really feel super qualified to like talk about what they were like when they started. Because it was in a slightly different world than I was in at the time, but they were on like Jamie Josta's label and stuff, you know, like they were sort of like, they were kind of like the East Coast like heirs to the throne of terror and Hatebreed and stuff like that. Maybe American Nightmare 2 or something. But with every record, they got more and more unique, you know? And so I started paying attention, like just on the basis of like the records they were making and stuff. And I was reading the lyrics and looking at the artwork and all that stuff and just being like, wow, there's really something to this. Like these guys are amazing, you know? And they're in the same town I was from. And so a good old friend of mine joined the band, this guy Dave, and who I knew from like going to shows in the 90s. He was older than them and played in this like punk band called Anal Sausage, and he played in this band called The Boils, who I really loved. And so it made sense to start playing shows together and stuff. And then they made, you know, that record, No One Deserves to Be Here More Than Me, which just like blew me away.
It's great. And,
well, even like the name is like a Miranda July reference, who's like a, you know, an artist who makes like films and writes books and stuff. And no one was, you know, no one around on the East Coast or in Philly was like doing stuff like that at the time. They were just the coolest band. And I also think that, you know, to a degree, like really underrated still in terms of their importance. Cause like, I don't think, like they were the first band to record with Will Yip, who went on to record like, you know, Title Fight and all those like Run for Cover bands. And then like Ceremony made a record with them and stuff. But he, like, I don't think you get like guitar music as it exists now without Blacklisted in that record. So
you're not wrong if they're underrated, because I didn't even know about them.
Yeah,
like until people were like putting me on.
Mm-hmm.
But like, even then, like I don't know, like, you know, like I don't know. People still talk about like some bands. I'm like, really? Like, why are you? I mean, like that band. So like, mm-hmm. I took them. I'm like, oh, this is like, no, like this is just good.
Yeah.
But then when you like dig deeper and like. And then you had like the front man like playing barefoot, and then like, you mm-hmm. know, and other stuff, like how he was like, you know, like just a crazy like cool dude, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, like, you know, you could just dig deep, and I was like, oh, like why isn't this like, you're right, you know what I mean? Like it took me, who like I'm from a later era, mm-hmm. to only find out because I was put off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So like,
and that's okay. I mean, that's, you know, that's the way art works sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I did all the touring around that record, and. It's, you know, it's hard to understate just how fearless a move that was at the time, you know, like how the kinds of shows that they were playing and the kinds of audience, because, you know, they blazed a trail, you know, like there wasn't an appetite for showing up with delay pedals and stuff at the hardcore show before them, really. And so there were some shows that were pretty, like there was some adversarial relationships with the audiences at a lot of those shows. I don't, that's just kind of answer your question of like why those bands and why me. I'm not really sure, but it felt, in both cases, it felt like supernatural.
Do you think they knew how like the way you're telling me of how big, how fan of you are of those bands, let alone whether you're in the band or not? Do you think they knew?
Blacklisted definitely did, because I was very vocal about how big a fan I was and how it like important and brave I thought that record was.
Interesting. So you go on that tour with Have Heart.
Yeah.
So, and then that's when you meet Ceremony.
Well, we knew them before.
Oh, but like that's when the relationship.
But it was really exciting. Like part of the reason, I think in retrospect, part of the reason I was so excited to go on that tour was because I was like, oh, I get to hang out with Anthony and all those guys, like, and yeah. Ross and stuff for a month or whatever.
And is that when you, that's, is that basically the tour that made it for you during the band? Or you think it took more?
I'm really bad with like timeline stuff, but it was like within the next like couple years, probably. I don't think, yeah, I can't remember when, probably 2 years later or something like that.
It's just like, can you join the band? Like,
yeah, so someone left and they needed someone. So
nothing crazy, just like, we need someone, and yeah. You're that someone.
Yeah, yeah. And well, I mean, they were gearing up to do, you know, they had released Runner Park, which, same thing, like it was pretty, you know, ballsy record to put out at the time. I mean, Ceremony were like a brave and ballsy band from the beginning, but you know, they were beginning to branch out a little bit sonically and had no intention of slowing down. And so yeah, I think Anthony and Ross came to me and said, you know, this is what we want to do, and we want you to do it with us.
That record is perfect, perfect. What's the word? Perfect, a perfect climax. Like, I can't think of an, like, I don't think, this might sound like too much Kiss ass, but I don't think there'll ever be another record or a band that, like, whatever you want to do, like, starting from a very aggressive band to, like, becoming a, I don't know, like, I guess, softer band. Mm-hmm. And, like, there'll never be another band that will do it like Ceremony did.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you said, there's Blacklist, and I'm sure, like, off the top of my head, there's other bands who, like, were very, like, you know, very, like, out there with the aggressive sound, and then they changed to a more lean sound or very niche sound. But the way Ceremony did it, the way Ron Hurt Park came out, I don't think there'll ever be a band. there'll never be a band, like, that could do it the way they did it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not, but I also don't know that I would even really know where to look for it. You know what I mean? Like, I imagine that it's possible for someone to do it. I mean,
it's possible. It's just, like, it won't, like I hope there's more bands to, like, that. Like, even, like, in different ways. Like, I hope there's someday a band that sounds like Locke and that ends up being, like, a death metal band. And, like, you know what I mean? Stuff like that where, like, they just skip to, like, a whole, like, it doesn't have to be all that far.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just don't think, or I could see, like, another band just being, like, so, like, doing it very perfect. You know what I mean? Doing it very, like, very good. But,
well, it's funny you say Locke to a death metal band, because, like, you know, like, Sam has done that, obviously, and a lot of people that we know have done stuff like that, but they just choose to do it, you know, through other, you know, breaking up and doing a new band or whatever. And the difference, I think, with Ceremony is that, like, they and we, I guess, you know, for the majority of the time that's been a band, have just gone about making music, like, the same way the whole time through. There's never any, like, deliberation about, like, okay, we're gonna make a record that's like this. Like, the last record we made was written in the same way that their first record was made, which is just, like, everyone gets in a room and works on music, and then whatever comes out is what comes out. And a lot of people, you know, over the years will say stuff like, they should break up and do a different band, and it's like, that's just not how, I just don't think that's how, like, any of us see what a band is. You know, if that makes sense. Like, I think it's just like a, you know, it's friends making music together. And if that means that, and, you know, for us, it's like the engine is that keeps it going is, like, the freedom to be creative, you know, like, it's like, I think if we did set out to make the same record every time, we probably wouldn't have as many records as we do, you know. What's the point, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think I'd certainly love to see more bands do sort of like what Blacklisted did and what Ceremony did and what, you know, other, I'm sure there's dozens of examples even now of bands who are like that. I think it's become a lot more normal, actually, for bands to, you know, evolve and stuff like that. But yeah, there's no reason, there's no rules. You can do whatever you want.
like punk's supposed to be like this open-minded, like, there's open-minded ideologies in a DB, but no one actually opened their mind for the music part. That's when I was like, when I even hear, like, people talk shit on Turnstile where they're like, you know, like, oh, they're like, they sold out, they're like, why are they dressed like that? I'm like what the, like, what's, like, and, like, what's the fucking point, you know what I mean? It's like, what, like, it's like punk has to go, or hardcore punk has to go beyond the doors, you know what I mean? Like, it's never gonna go anywhere if it's just, like, the same, like, small room with the same, you know what I mean, sounding bands. It's like, it's just, like, the reason bands like Temple of Angels, Narrowhead, Model Actors could be in a hardcore realm is bands like Ceremony. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, it's like people had to, I mean, obviously, they're like, you guys were, I mean, you guys kind of were like the guinea pigs of, like, people talking shit of, like, you know, like, oh, they, you know, like, they should have broken up, or why do they sound like this? But it's like, now, look at Sound of Fury. They got Temple of Angels, Model Actress, like, bands that are like, what the fuck, like, what do you sound like, you know what I mean? Like, that, I'm not the biggest fan, but I'm like, oh, it's cool that you're gonna see Pain of Truth and Temple of Angels in the same bill. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's crazy, that's wild.
Yeah, but it's cool.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
I mean, as a music fan, I'm certainly more interested in going to a show like that than one where it's like 15 bands are all sounded exactly the same. I just don't have the tolerance for that.
Yeah.
And I think I would get bored.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
like it's a different world we're living in. I guess some people have to eventually, you know, what's it called? Dig through the dirt to get through the, you know, the other side.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, you know, one thing that helps is, cause you're right. Like, I mean, you know, we've certainly, withstood infinite shit talk over the years, but like it's amazing how easy it is to just not give a fuck about anything. None of us care at all. Like, it's just not a thing that any of us.
Well, it's like people can talk shit, but at the end of the day, you guys are hella up. You know what I mean? Like, you guys played a sold out show in LA. Like, after being a band for how like 15 years?
18? It's a long
time. Yeah, like, it's like, you guys are still playing a sold-out show to LA while playing the fucking hits and playing the new stuff, and people are...
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I don't know. Like, Turnstile's a great example. Like, bro, like, you talk shit and you're like little show, whatever. But at the end of the day, Turnstile's like playing, hard, like they're playing Leeway style riffs to like a sold out, like, auditorium. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's
like
amazing. It's great.
You know what I mean? But yeah.
But they also did it the right way.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they slowly built and just were themselves for like 10 years before anyone paid attention, really. I mean, people are paying attention, of course, but like, the when it kind of broke in the last couple of years, like, that was the culmination of like a basically like a decade of them just like doing their own thing. You know, which again is like, that's a great lesson for people to learn, I think, you know?
And I think someone said, it's like, well, Turnstile was the biggest hardcore band, the headline signing period. It's like, to most people, like, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, especially at the time. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like, it's like, what do you do? What do you do if you want to keep grinding and like, you still want to play music and you're playing good music and you've already done everything in hardcore? This is, you know, this is kind of like the outcome. You know what I mean? It's like, of like, this could be possible now.
Yeah, well, they made everyone come to them, I think. That's sort of the difference, is that they just did something that made tons of people feel a certain way. And then they brought the world to them rather than the other way around, which is like what most people do.
Okay,
and so when that's the case, yeah, I mean, there's no ceiling on it. I still don't think people really know where the ceiling on that is. But again, like, I think it's because they did things. They're obviously, they're like supernaturally gifted in a million different ways, but and maybe like a once in a generation kind of group. But also, like, you know, I think people who only became aware in the last couple years, like, didn't see them, you know, like, slowly building and just, you know, having really clear ideas about what their band was and how they wanted to do things, and also just like treating people right, and, you know, being, you know,
good people,
being really good people and really fun. Yeah. Like, everything. So, yeah, that's totally true. I will say, though, at the same time, like, I don't think that, like, I still have a lot of love for a band of like little kids that bangs out a demo that rips and then breaks up right away. You know, that needs to happen too. I wouldn't probably want to go see like 20 bands that sounded all the same, like, play together. Like,
yeah.
I might go see two of them, or, you know, whatever. but I just, you know, for my whole life, I've loved like all different kinds of music. And to me, it's exciting to like try and do new and different things. You know, I think with Ceremony in particular, it's always just been like, you know, if there is a rule creatively, it's always just like, we can't do something we've already done. So yeah.
Is there gonna be a new Ceremony record?
Eventually.
What would that be? Because Ceremony went from being like, you know, the outspoken young kids to like a punk record to a rock and roll almost X type beat punk hardcore record. from a sad record to a celebration of life record. So I'm like, what's next? Like, you, I feel like almost covered every emotion a Hartford kid would have.
I don't know.
Like, I'm like, what is like?
We'll have to see. I mean, like, I'm excited. It's funny you asked that question. We ask the same question.
Okay.
Like, every time we start thinking about it, we're taking this entire year off. So we're not really thinking about anything. Ross just had a baby, and a lot of us are busy with other things. And we last year worked so hard that we were just like, let's just take this whole year off. But yeah, we always ask ourselves the same thing, like, what's it going to be? And then it's never exactly what we think either. Like,
interesting.
You know, it's always a little different, but. Yeah, the only thing you really count on is... I do actually think that all of our records do sound like us, though.
Yeah.
So I think all I can say is that when new music materializes, it probably won't sound like any of the old music, but it will sound like us.
I have a feeling it's going to be like a... Because, like I said, every record has an emotion and it has its thing, but I feel like the new record is going to be a... looking out the window type record, because like now that Ross has a kid, I can only imagine it's like, oh well, you see life,
yeah,
like upside down, you know what I mean, or maybe in an, I don't know, like, you know what I mean. That's why I have a feeling. Like, I could imagine the new Ceremony record just like every, like, you guys were in a room this whole time, now you guys are looking out the room, like, I don't know, kind of like a futurist, like looking at, like, I don't know, like something more, like something beyond just an emotion, you know what I mean, more like a thought, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have kids and don't plan to anytime soon, but yeah, I think it's pretty common for when you do, for it really to change your perspective, how you look at the world, and you know, Ross's writing is always like very much from his own perspective, and I'm sure his perspective has changed. You know,
like
so much in the last six months.
I mean, for someone who, like, you know, just gone through a lot and talked about it, whether it was poetry or music, I'm like, damn, like now you gotta like now you have a kid, where it's I think that there's a Converge song on, not the latest record, the one before that, where it's like, he's like, when I saw you for the first time, I knew I had to survive. Like, that's a crazy, like, I cannot imagine that feeling of like, I gotta be alive, or like I gotta be okay because someone else depends on me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think that's very true. It's like, I think, and Painted Black has songs about this on the last record and also on the one coming up, because our singer has now two kids. But yeah, you know, I think one way people see punk and hardcore as something like incredibly nihilistic, you know, and obviously, like, I understand why, you know, but I think when you having a kid is something that does sort of like come with it, or, you know, accompanies with it, like this obligation to like think about, like, you know, leaving the world maybe a little bit better than you found it. You know, with Painted Black, like, Yeeman is 50 or something. He's older than I am
50.
By quite a bit. Yeah. And one of the things that we always like kind of want to address with our stuff is like, how do you, you know, like have like a full and fulfilling life as like an older person who is still punk and still, you know, connected to all the same sort of like ideological stuff and, you know, social justice things and, you know, whatever. Like, these are typically the kinds of stuff, things that people put aside once they hit a certain age, you know, like they move to the suburbs and they have a couple kids and they stop caring about the music or the community or any of the politics that go along with it and stuff. And so I think, you know, a lot of the stuff that Dan writes about now is like through the lens of, you know, how do you make all that stuff work together, you know?
Were you ever tempted by the idea
of
just being a suburban dad?
No,
never tempted.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason why? Oh, is there a moment or a reason or anything that's like that? It was clear for you that you're like, I'm gonna be a musician. Because in reality, you're just like living the life of a rock star, like a musician. Or like you're
well,
playing
not
a band.
Really.
I mean, you know, but yeah, like, not like, I guess not like that. But like you're like, you know, you're. you're in multiple, like, you know, even like painted black, where it's like, that's like it's such a, what's the word, a very detailed band, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Like, but it's like, yeah, obviously people know you for Ceremony at this point, but like it's like painted black doesn't come like any doesn't come up short as far as like, there's still like a very, like, there's depth to the band. Mm-hmm. Open City, it's a very very like, it's almost like rock and roll, you know, it's not necessarily like that sound, but it's almost like that rock mentality, I guess, if that makes, you know, very like free, very mm-hmm. it's like, so like, but that makes sense, like you are in all these bands that are very, there's depth to it, whether mm-hmm. it's just you and obviously the members you're in, like just at some point you're not like, damn, like I gotta like step away from all this and just like have a kid or I don't know, like it's just it's not too, does it get too much at some point?
Well, the stuff that gets too much is all boring stuff, you know, like, it's the stuff, like, it's, especially when you have all the plates spinning at once, you know, there's a fourth band that I do that's not, hasn't done anything in a while, but, like, I consider to be act, like, I've never been in a band that broke up, for example. I just think that's weird, you know, to, like,
break up?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just, again, like, I kind of approach, I mean, if it was beyond my control, that would be one thing. Like, if
was Blacklisted technically broken?
I don't know. I mean, Blacklisted broke up and got back together, like, 100 times, so I guess so, but I think they're...
Like, there's still a possibility of a Blacklisted.
Sure, yeah, I mean, I would say it's
putting it out there, hopefully.
Yeah, maybe, but I know some of them are doing a new thing called Static Clone that's really good. That kind of sounds like Amoebics. Okay. They have a couple flexies out. Yeah, they're really great. So I don't know, maybe not. But like, I certainly understand the impulse to kind of cast off any of the baggage of like the band. You know, the reason we started Open City was kind of for that reason, but with Painted Black, where like it had kind of gotten to a point, not in terms of like status or anything, but like, we do things really deliberately, and the band had been around for a really long time, and so it seemed like whenever we did stuff, it was pretty hard, you know? It was like, just even playing one show was like tons of work to like make sure that the show was the kind of thing that we'd want to do, or, you know, the, you know.
It was a band of artists.
Yeah, and like, also just like, Jared had moved out here, and some of us were like, at one point I was in New York, and so it was this whole thing, and so Dan and I were like, what, let's just do something where we can just fucking play a basement and just on 2 days' notice if we want to, and, you know, not practice once a week and just be a regular band. So I understand the impulse of doing that. But I've never been in a band that broke up before just because of how I see being in a band. You know, like, to me, like, being in a band is like the people in it. And so if you're still friends with them and they're still good people, the idea of like breaking up, and this is like not to throw shade at anyone who does a last show or anything like that, but just for me personally, I don't see, you know, I'd rather just not do anything for 4 years and then just do another show and, you know, not make a big deal out of it. What I was about to say was that, you know, keeping all the plates spinning at once, like all the details and all the, like right now, like Painted Black and Open City have new records coming out at the end of the year. And like just getting all the fucking artwork and the dates for everything and getting input from this person and, you know, a quote from this person, all this stuff, like that is infuriating and like so, it's such a time suck and it's whatever, but that to me that's the stuff that you put up with so that you get to do the fun thing, which is like making records and playing shows and doing something with your friends. And to me that, like, I mean, I guess it's not really a choice if you do that instead of being a suburban dad. Again, no offense to suburban dads, I guess. Although maybe offense to suburban dads, actually, like if they're shitty, which a lot of them are. But yeah, like, I think for me, it's just like, I've never once had that instinct to be, you know.
Are you against it, or it just wasn't for you? Or is there a part of you where it's like, the punk kid in you is like, fuck, man.
And then you're like, it's not like.
I mean, I can say like, fuck suburban. Well, I mean, like, fuck every suburban dad out there, but is it more like, the punk kid in you is like, I want to be free?
I think when I was a kid, I was pretty miserable when I was a kid.
Why?
I don't know. Like, being a kid sucks.
Like, teenager, or like a child?
Everything,
or
like, yeah. Like, I just, from, yeah, like, I was like, just like your classic, like, depressed, lonely, fucking kid.
You were lonely as a kid?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Or explain your childhood before, because I know you gotta go.
I got
time?
I got a little time, yeah. Okay. I think it's funny because you wanted to start.
Yeah.
I think that I just I didn't like the limitations of being a child. I was pretty aware of them from the onset. You know, like that was like I live in my parents' house. I can't do anything. I want to do the stuff I want. Like, but even from like a really, I hated doing things I didn't want to do, but you're forced to constantly when you're a kid. And I just, you know, I spent a ton of time by myself. I didn't have a lot of friends. Like, I would always have, like, one friend, you know?
No siblings?
I had a younger brother.
You want to get kicked out of your younger brother?
We did a little bit, but I don't know. It's weird. Like, I've talked to so many people over the years who were in similar situations. And I think when you have a sibling that's, like, 2 years your junior or senior, you're either, like, best friends or you, like, never talk.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like that's what I've heard. And we didn't never talk, but, like, he also wasn't, like, you know, I wasn't, like, knocking on his door to be like, yo, let's go do something. But I feel like we did anyway.
But you guys, like, parallel now? Or like,
yeah, we're really, yeah, everything. Like, I think it got better, like, the older we got, you know? But that's probably because of me. Like, I think I was probably more, like, I was probably way more, like, negative and stuff when I was a little kid.
Were your parents like religious or like strict, or what kind of parents were they? Like,
my parents were like just classic, like baby boomer, you know. They were both born in 1951, which means in 1969 they were 18.
Okay.
And so they were like, lived through Beatlemania and like the British invasion and all that, like, 60s rock and roll stuff, Vietnam, like, you know, all that shit. Like,
they lived through a crazy time.
Yeah, I mean, in a certain sense, yeah, but I mean, I think for them it wasn't really very crazy at all. They were just, like, regular kids, but just to kind of, like, put them in, like, a historical context. And they, you know, their vibe very much stemmed from that. So, like, they were liberal, and they,
oh, okay,
they were both, like, educators who worked with like disabled people and stuff. And so they were cool.
Yeah.
You know, like they had all the right, they're like NPR listeners, you know, that kind of
thing. You grew up in an open-minded home, let's say.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't even like weird when I got into punk and stuff. Like, it wasn't like they didn't understand what it was. Like, I think if anything, like my dad, for example, whenever I got to control the stereo in the car, I'd always have like a tape or like a Minor Threat tape or like a Gorilla Biscuits tape or something like that. And you know, the music on that stuff is great. So I think he could understand, you know.
Did you have a close relationship with each of your parents, or was it very like, those are my parents and I'm the son? Or like, you actually got to know them?
I was pretty like, I was pretty secretive, I think, you know, as a kid. I wanted to have like my own. We had a really small house, and like we were all sort of like piled on top of each other and stuff. And I just really valued privacy and stuff, which I still do now, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah. So you know, I think we had pretty normal, like good.
What do you think about you now? Like, are they like proud, or are they like?
Yeah, I think they think it's cool. We definitely like I hit a point. And I've heard this again from a lot of people who like do music and stuff, where like for so long their parents are like, so like, when are you gonna get a real job? Or, you know, like they just can't understand like why you would be doing this and stuff. And to be fair, like I do have a day job that also involves music and stuff. So I think they have now figured out. I book concerts in Philadelphia and have for almost like 20 years.
Like
now.
concerts? Or like partnership?
Everything, you know, anything.
Like you book like big shows too, or like, mm-hmm. like what's a big artist you book?
Well, I kind of have two things. Like one is this production company called R5, who's been doing shows in Philly since the 90s, that I now co-own with my friend Jeff. that does shows at this place called the First Unitarian Church and like a bunch of other places. And you know, everyone has played there. Like, and, I mean, basically anyone you could like Grammy award winning art, you know, everyone. Then we also, me and a couple of my friends helped to run this concert hall called Union Transfer that books, you know, like same thing, like anyone that you can think of has probably played there. But it's not that big. It's like 1200 cap or something, but that like, I have like, I get paid to do that. So I have the ability to kind of do whatever I want and with my bands, you know, so I don't, I don't have the financial imperative that I think a lot of people do where they have to, you know, maybe like sacrifice their integrity or like do tours that they wouldn't necessarily want to do or, you know, whatever, just because it'll pay the bills.
I mean, there's a lot of questions I want to ask
but to answer your question though, before you do, like at some point my parents figured out that like I wasn't destitute or like sleeping on the street, and they were basically just like, okay, I guess
you weren't a starving artist.
I don't understand like how this works, but like I guess you know what you're doing, so which is, and now I think they think it's really cool. And my dad works at a school in Kensington in Philly. Well, he did until he retired this year actually, but in North Philly he worked at the school, and you know, it's gotten to the point where he's like the really old guy and like the young teachers like are fans of my bands, so he gets to be like, he gets to feel like cool, you know, like he goes to work, he's just, you know, like someone will be like, you know, every so often there'll be an anecdote like, oh, the guy was wearing your shirt at school and I got to be like, hey, you know, like that's my thing. Yeah. And I, you know, I think that he gets a kick out of that. Maybe not so much because he thinks it's actually cool, but because it makes him think that he like is happening or something, which, you know, the older you get, the harder that is. But anyway, you were going to,
do you think being straight edge or being just, I guess, I don't know, like open-minded or just being someone who like is always constantly like, I don't know, likes all this stuff and, and straight edge and is on a, I guess not a, cause based on the bus interview, you're not a party, you're not a party person, or you are, but you're not.
I'll go out, but I'm not going out for the reason of like getting fucked up.
Like you're a successful straight edge person, I guess, at that. You know what I mean? And I was talking to Adam from Going Underground, and he said kind of like, it's like, would you say like those things, like being straight edge, being open minded, being part of punk, being part of hardcore, like all these, you know, things that involve hard work ethic, led you to be, to have, I guess, quote unquote, the success you have?
Well, maybe.
Or do you think like if you would have never gotten to punk and being a normal like person, you would still would have just been as successful or as like busy or as?
I don't know, because I'll say this, like, you know, when I graduated high school, I've worked like my whole life. Like I got my first job when I was 8.
What was your first job?
I worked at a, like selling Christmas ornaments at like a pop-up like holiday fair.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's random.
And then I had a paper route for like, I don't know, however long, like as a little, that's like a job you get when you're 10, you know, like throwing papers on fucking people's things. And then I started working, I was really into computers when I was a kid. The timing of my youth was like, it was like when I was a kid, no one had a computer. It wasn't a thing yet, really. And then when I was like 12 or 13, that's like when everyone started buying home computers. And so I got really into computers and all that stuff. It was kind of before like the internet really, but like there was like America Online and stuff. But anyway, I was really into them. And I got a job like working at a computer store when I was 14. And then like, I was like a technician, like a, you know, I was like 14. A little kid. Yeah. But what I was going to say was like, so I've worked like my whole life, like making my own money and stuff. And you know, like that's part of the reason why my record collection looks the way it does. Cause like I had money, you know, like, and I was straight edge. Cause like I didn't spend money on beer or cigarettes or anything. So I only spent money on records. Which in retrospect was really cool. But anyway, like, yeah, what I was gonna say was like, when I graduated high school, I was really good at computers and stuff. And so I went to college for computer shit, you know, and then like instantly kind of realized that like, just cause you're good at something doesn't mean you like doing it. And so I I dropped out like within a year or two, and just like started doing whatever I could, that connected to music at the time, you know, like working shows, loading in, you know, like whatever, sweeping up at the end of the night, you know, I just wanted to be at gigs or go on tour, you know, book shows, whatever. And, you know, for a long time, it was like, you know, pretty sketchy to try and make your rent and stuff, even though Philly had at the time really famously cheap rent, you know. But yeah, so I think my takeaway from that was like, that I don't know that I actually would be able to just like sit in a cubicle somewhere, like if it was doing something that I really hated, which I think maybe connects back to being a really young person where, you know, I hated, like I was good at school, but I fucking hated it, you know? Yeah. And I hated doing anything that like I didn't want to do. Yeah. So yeah, I'm not really sure. I don't know how good I would be at just doing something. You know, having said that, though, I do, you know, see the value in just like regular work, like labor. You know, I think sometimes I do fantasize about having like some kind of job that I work 40 hours and just can turn off when I leave. Because for the things I do now, it's like it's
the hit show randomly.
Yeah, it's like all day, every day, forever, like for the rest of my life. You know.
Yeah.
But it's nice because I pretty much work with like all my friends, and the music I make is only with my friends, and it's only stuff that I'm interested in or I'm excited by or, you know, whatever. So in that sense, I do have it really good. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Is there a like working, I guess, quote unquote music industry or the left? Mm-hmm. Does it turn you off to sometimes? Like where it's like, yeah, yo, I love that artist, but like that fucking mm-hmm. artist was a piece of shit. When it, you know, when like so-and-so tried, when it came to that, like, I feel like this, yeah, it happened.
Yeah, of course. Although I would say more often it's the opposite. Like more often you're like, wow, like these people are great.
Oh. You know?
Yeah, because I think, you know.
That man actually sucks, but then you're like, oh, the people are this sick.
Yeah, or just, you know, you get a newfound appreciation for the way people do things, or, you know. Like there are people, of course, you come across who are deeply entitled and just like, you know, just fucking babies who, you know, just, I don't know.
What's the worst type of, like, what's the worst type of, like, music? Like, that's where it has the worst type of artist. Where, like, you have to deal with
it. That's a really good question. Well, I will say, like, we do a pretty limited, like, kind of, like, stuff. Like, we don't really book a lot of stuff that we don't also like. I will say that there was a period where I wasn't responsible for this, but like that period of kind of when the Warped Tour was sort of in its death throes and there were those like crabcore bands and the, you know, Flatiron fucking haircut like scene bands, is that a thing? Pretty much all those people were fucking horrible.
Really?
Yeah. The ones that we dealt with, and they were horrible bands. Like everything about them was just like just awful. Like they had nothing to do with like punk or.
They were the modern version of glam bands. Yes, like they went, they went based off a look and a sound, mm-hmm. and if they did it right, they got
better. That's exactly what it was.
No, yeah. I have an obsession with like glam bands that like fell down.
Mm-hmm.
That like later you like look at stories of like they were like, you know, the grunge era and then like the record deal fell off and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. So I had this thing with like. With like scene bands,
yeah.
Like I was looking at that band Metro Station. I was looking at that band. What's like Boys Like Girls,
mm-hmm.
The Cab, like Forever the Sickest Kids. Like
yeah, like it's funny because I don't really remember what any of that stuff is because to me it's all just like one thing.
You were into hardcore. You were like because you guys were like I guess technically like when like Painted Black, I'm guessing was around. Like obviously those bands were around. You know what I mean? Like
we were, and it's funny because we were both beneficiaries. Sorry, that's my dog. Yeah, she just got picked up from daycare. She's very friendly.
What's her name?
Groucho.
Groucho?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a beautiful dog.
Thank you. We were all kind of beneficiaries of a similar thing, which was the end of something, like Painted Black was like. We had shirts in Hot Topic, and we were in like
really?
We were in Alternative Press magazine, and like and like, you know, we were in Tony Hawk Pro Skater and stuff, like, but that was more just by nature of a certain, like, we were on the real fringes of it, you know, but like there was so much like business to be done at that time that somehow, you know, we got like caught up in some of that stuff or whatever. And so luckily it all ended for all of us, and a lot of those bands like went away. I don't even, like, I can't imagine what those people are doing now, especially because a lot of them were like 18 with like full face tattoos and like crazy piercings.
Oh,
but,
well, yeah,
they were all making like $200 a show, and they had techs and crew, and like, I'm like, to me, I was old enough at the time to see that and just be like, this is such a scam. Like these bands are being taken advantage of by their labels and their managers. And like, I mean, that, again, like that was also at a time where like bands didn't have managers, you know, like they didn't have like those kinds of deals. So it was like pretty wild to be doing a show at the First Unitarian Church where, you know, six of these bands would pull up all in buses, all with like full crews, and like, their approach to it was just like totally alien from what any of us were in it for. And then you saw, like, we'd be paying them at the end of the night, and they'd be like, here's your $200. Like, how does that work? And you would just realize that they're all just, you know, kind of being taken for a ride. But so on one hand, you feel bad for them. But on the other hand, they were like the biggest fucking assholes. Like, you know, a lot of those people, they're just jocks, really. Like, you know,
they were there. I mean, because it was like scene music, like emo music, mm-hmm. and then there was like crabcore, and mm-hmm. then there was like metalcore, mm-hmm. and then there was straight up like crunkcore, and crunkcore was
what
like
was that?
Like just like straight up almost like borderline, like imagine like shitty rap music, mm-hmm. with like people dressed as scene.
Yeah, well, it's funny too, because I mean, like, in a certain way, like, I think history has sort of vindicated a lot of that stuff, because the musical DNA from all of that, I think, has really seeped into just like mainstream music and stuff, like rap and all that's like a lot of stuff is musically pretty similar to, you know,
yeah, I mean, like,
pop radio now.
SoundCloud rap like then happened, and then everybody mm-hmm. got a FaceTime, made a sad song.
Totally.
And then, yeah.
So it's, I mean, I don't know, maybe the joke's on me, but like those people are bad. But I think, you know, anyone who's, you know, I think, like I said, more often than not, you're surprised at how cool people are, or like how much you have in common with them, you know, because, you know, if you're out there playing 100 or 200 shows a year, you have to kind of, you know, I don't think it's possible to really have, I mean, for a lot of people, not a lot, but there are people that have horrible egos and stuff who are famous and all that stuff. But I think, I just don't see how you can maintain it for a really long time. You know,
and be successful.
And be, yeah.
I mean, unless you're probably like Taylor Swift, or like, you mean Justin Bieber fell off.
Yeah, well, he doesn't really do anything anymore, right? He's just,
I mean, he tried to release like that single, and then everything happened where like he told his fans to like leave the music playing as it's like as they're sleeping, so he could get more streams. But yeah. I mean, yeah, even Justin Bieber fell off. The only, I think, artist that's never fallen off is Taylor Swift.
Yeah, yeah, but she's like not even like a. That's like a different thing. Like,
yeah.
That to me is.
But like, as like, even like, you could be the biggest artist in the world. Mm-hmm. Even the biggest artists in the world eventually have their downfalls.
Yeah, and I think that's part of that's something that I think, again, like coming out of DIY and punk, like, in, you know, again, like I came of age in the '90s when like Fugazi was still around, and like, you
did
know,
did you see Fugazi?
I did.
That's crazy.
Yeah, a few times, yeah.
What's another crazy one you saw?
I don't know. Ask me something.
Did you see Warzone?
Who?
Warzone?
I didn't go see Warzone. I could have seen Warzone a lot, but I didn't really care about that stuff back then.
Did you go see, did you see Death Threat? Like when Peace and Security came out?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I saw both Death Threats, the one word one and the two word one. It was, at the time, it was like, which one do you like more? And I liked the one word one more. But I did see
some of the craziest shows. Like maybe you don't like the band, but just like, this is fucking insane. Or did you see like mainstream bands? Like, you saw Rage Against the Machine ever? Like,
no, I never saw that. I was weird. Like, it's funny. Beth and I were talking about this the other day. Like, I didn't want to go to concerts like that. And when I was a kid, and
even
I,
Rage, like even bands like that.
I mean, I liked them, but it just it wasn't like the experience of going to a concert like that just wasn't appealing to me until a lot later. Like I was like, why would I want to go to an arena? You know,
I still hate concerts.
Like, yeah,
I get you.
I mean, like I bought those records when they came out and stuff, and I liked them, but it just seemed like a different universe to me. Like for years, like the biggest show I ever went to was like 1,000 people, and I don't think I went to a show bigger than that until I was like in my 20s or something. So in retrospect, I'm like I could have seen Nirvana, and like I could have seen REM, and I could have seen like basically any, you know, any one of those bands that you mentioned. Like I saw Hole, I saw Foo Fighters like on their like first, like stuff like that. But those bands played the same place Fugazi played, you know? So it was like, they were like, Fugazi was so big that like, they were playing the same room that like the Foo Fighters and
I didn't know Fugazi was that big.
Yeah, they did like, they would do like three or four, when they played LA, they would do like multiple nights at the Palladium, like two or three nights.
I knew they were big, but I didn't know they were that big.
Yeah, well, their shows were $5 and you would just, everyone went, even if you didn't like them, you know, that was kind of the deal. But yeah, it's like they were, yeah, they were amazing, obviously. I'm a huge, huge fan of all that stuff. But I never really went to big stuff until later, and now I'm like, man, I missed so much cool shit, you know? Yeah. Like, I just because I was like, oh, that's a big rock concert, fuck that. Like, I remember one night, I did see Oasis, but I remember one time there was a show that was Foo Fighters, Oasis, Beck, and I think Moby played first or something, which I don't give a fuck about Moby, but like
Moby the vegan guy?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know he was like that active. That early.
It was in like 90, I don't know.
The vegan, right? The guy with the big.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fucking crazy. Clown.
but yeah, it was like Beck, Foo Fighters, Oasis, and then I was like on my way to go to the show, and I was like, let's go to the church and see like this like screamo band instead, like this 400 years, this band, we went to see them, and instead I was just like, man, like what was wrong with me? Like I couldn't, you know, I passed up on so much shit like that.
Were they like, was like shows back then clearly like, for example, you go see Tsunami, it's $20, mm-hmm. and like if you try to go see White Reaper is like clearly like 50, 60, mm-hmm. like was like, were shows back then even clearly like a huge difference, or were like they kind of the same price?
I mean, things were way cheaper back then across the board. I don't know.
So like a hardcore show would be how much? Like $5?
$5, yeah.
And how much would it be like Oasis and that? Like 10?
20 probably, maybe.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, 15.
Yeah, so yeah, I would have, yeah, you missed out. I think he was like, yeah.
I know, I mean, it wasn't even a matter of like the price, it was just like I remember like, I loved the Smashing Pumpkins when they were around, and I just like never went to see, they played all the time, and I just like never went.
Because
I just thought it was like, to me it was just like, oh, that's like a rock concert. I don't care, you know.
Yeah.
I'm into like punk shit.
I think the same thing as like the rock concert, but also like the price. I'm like, someone's like the price. Well, is like
it's way crazier now.
Yeah.
In every way. I mean, you know, like a big hardcore show could be $35, just like a regular show. And you know, I went to see Neil Young a week or two ago, and it was, you know, $150. We went to see The Cure. It was like,
$150 for Neil Young?
Probably. Maybe more.
That's a lot. I mean, I'm paying the same price for 2 days of Sonic Fury.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you know, it's
a different thing.
It's a pretty good deal, like, you know, considering all the stuff nowadays. Like, I went to see The Cure and it was probably $200, you know? So it's like, it's... And they left a ton of money on the table, so it's like... I mean, it's crazy, but yeah, back then, the other thing that I'll say, I mean, not to digress about like what it was like back then, but like you would just buy tickets to things at like the record store, like, and I don't remember a show like ever selling out either, you know?
Back
like,
then?
No, not really. Like, I remember one time I went to see, there was this place in Philly that's not there anymore called the Trocadero, and like that was like the place where big shows were. So like, but even like, so it'd be like, I saw like Beck there, and I saw I'm trying to think of who else, like I don't know, everyone played there in the 90s, like any band that you can think of played there. And I remember one time going to see Bjork, like when Bjork first came out, and it was like, and I remember taking the train down and stuff, and then getting to the show and then being like, oh, it's sold out. And I was like, what? I was like, I never in my life.
It wasn't common.
It was so uncommon. Yeah. It was just like not a thing. Like you would just go to the show with $10 and get in like no matter what, which means, and you know, in retrospect, like all the shows that in my head were like packed and crazy, like probably actually weren't, you know, but yeah, it was weird. But yeah, you just go to the record store and they would have like the list of shows and you just like buy a ticket at the record store and go.
It sounds way more easier than having to like, tickets are online, and then you're like, I feel like, fuck, I'm not buying no ticket online.
I know.
And
I'm
kind of against buying tickets online. Like in my head, like not as like a social thing, but in my head, I'm like, it's a hardcore show. I'm not buying a ticket online. And then I'm like, who has a ticket for sale? Just like, but like, it's still a thing where it's like, or like, can someone get me? But it's like, I'm so against the idea of like, I don't want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean,
how come? Like, why not?
It's just like, it's a hardcore show. Like, not that I'm downgrading hardcore or anything, mm-hmm. but just like, it's a fucking hardcore show. Like, yeah. I feel like that's the excitement of it. Like, get to the gig,
mm-hmm.
and then just get to the gig however you can. And pay and just get in. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I had the idea of like pre-sale tickets going. I'm like, it's like this band, like this band's talking about fuck the cops. And like, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, not that matters, but it's like, this is the type of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, fuck the police, fuck.
Totally.
You know, like, it's like, we're gonna go mosh. It's like, why should I literally go beforehand to just go mosh?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, no, totally. And I think that you hit on a very interesting thing that I am constantly thinking about, which is that. You know, the scale of especially like things that are supposed to be underground or like in theory, like are supposed to be counterculture or underground. If they are really meant to be like, I don't want to say like a threat to the status quo, but like the kind of thing that might influence the way someone thinks for the better. It should maybe be a little hard to know about, you know, like there should be some barrier for entry, I think. And so things like certain kinds of over documentation or over publicity or whatever, like I think are potentially problematic, you know, like you don't, you know, like for a while in Philly, I don't know what it's like in LA these days. But, you know, the whole thing of, like, ask a punk where the show is. Like, I loved that. I thought that was great because it was, like, you know, anyone who is in the scene, like, knows, like, if you're like, oh, it's at this place, don't post the address anywhere. If you know, then it's fine. You know, that's, like, it's part of the I don't want to say brotherhood because
you'll get
it's
gendered. That
but,
way.
Like, but it's, like, it does keep... you know, pigs from being able to like search a fucking address and then show up and shut it down or like any number of other things that could be problematic. And also, you know, if you're engaged in any kind of like radical speech or something like that, like maybe you don't want that recorded and put on, you know, like whatever, like there are certain things that you might want to say about the cops or like politicians or like anything like that, that you wouldn't want easily searchable, like on the, you know, but that shit's important, you know, like people need to get together and, you know, talk about stuff like that. And also like, just, you know, like if you're fucking interviewing for a job and like I, luckily for me, like I'm never gonna have to be at a job interview at a corporation and say, you know, someone pull my fucking file off the internet and be like, so why do you want to burn the American flag? But like,
I never thought about it to that extent.
And that's like any employer now is going to just like search you automatically and just see like, and you're going to have this whole trail of stuff behind you. So I do think that like there is something, that's a thing I'd like to see people think about a little more these days in terms of like, I mean, it's great that, you know, things can get bigger and involve more people and stuff. But like, I do think on some level it is, you know, to your point about like, you know, you shouldn't have to buy an advance ticket to go mosh or whatever. Like, I do think there's something to that, like just in terms of like keeping it, you know, something that is, has something in common with like, you know, where the music came from, where the culture came from and stuff like that. But, that's probably a whole other can of worms, but I know what you're saying. And like it, you know, back when I first started going to shows, the idea of like having to like be online at 10 a.m. To buy a ticket to like a punk show, just like that's fucking crazy. You know, like that would be the craziest thing of all time.
It's fucking. I mean,
I also think that like The shows that I've been to in my life, even recently, that are the craziest are ones where people had to like wait in line all day to get in or something. Like, I don't know if you, did you go to that Infest reunion that was in LA, like the first one?
No, what year was that?
I don't know, it was a while ago. Yeah, it might have been a little before.
Probably like in elementary.
But I remember that show was like, there were no tickets. They were just like, we're playing tomorrow. And people just like got in line. And it was like, you know, 500 insane people who are willing to stand in line all day. And the show is legendary. And Ceremony played a show with Rocket from the Crypt and Suicidal Tendencies in San Francisco, like, I don't know, probably like 8 years ago or something.
Crazy lineup.
Really fun show. But it was free. And the only way you could go is by just waiting in line. It was like, I don't know, someone like, it was probably Vans or Converse paid for it, something like that. And so the line was like, just like 1,000 Suicidal fans, like all just like baked in the sun for 2 days, just like, but the show was insane. Like, because it was the craziest people were, it was, you know, it wasn't the first 700 people who clicked buy tickets in the audience. It was like the 1,000 people who were the most excited about the show inside. And I think that's true sometimes when we're on tour and we play a show somewhere random, like in the middle of the country, and it's like 2 hours driving from a bunch of places, but it's not maybe like somewhere, it's not a major city.
Yeah.
And so the show ends up being like all the craziest people who are all willing to go 2 hours to get there. And that's the show that's like,
okay, yeah,
that's And that's, I think, also kind of why, like not to keep talking about Sound and Fury, but like why that's always so great is because like so many people come from so far to like, and they're so excited to be there. And it's, you know, it's not lazy at all, or, you know, whatever. It's all the like
dedication.
The people are like the most stoked that are there. So, and there is something about like buying tickets online in advance that cuts down on that a little bit.
That's why, like, it's crazy to say about that, but like going to other small towns, just because when Angel Dust played LA, mm-hmm. I didn't go to LA. I went to Pioneer Town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm like, I don't want to see Angel Dust in LA. I want to see Angel Dust in
at Pappy's.
Yeah, where I've never even heard of the place or don't know what this town is called.
Yeah.
And I just searched it up on Google Maps. It's like 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. Like, I try to do that as much as possible. Or like, yeah, like, you know what I mean? Or like, mm-hmm. if a band's playing like Midnight Hour, and like maybe like somewhere I'm like, I'm gonna go see them at Midnight Hour because people want to see them in LA, and I'm the bad, or stuff like that.
Totally.
But yeah, but I guess
I know. Negative Approach just played a show somewhere random too.
They played LA and Bakersfield.
Yeah, I heard it was insane.
Yeah, but I mean, Bakersfield does have a lot of like punks, like a lot of like ride or die punks. But yeah, I get exactly what you're saying. I'd rather see this band in where like I know no one's gonna be there. I hope. Like, sometimes I hope no one's gonna be there because I'm like. Like when Madball played the Midnight Hour, mm-hmm. like I guess it was another show that all my homies were there, so it was just me like moshing and two other kids
to Madball.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was just like, this is the best. Like, in hindsight, it sucked for the band, but yeah, but for me, I was like, this is the time of my life. It's like I'm moshing to Set It Off mm-hmm. with like no one. You know what I mean? It's like I don't have to worry about no one hitting me.
I don't have to worry
about no one. Like, I'm just like I'm like windmilling all I want. You know what I mean? It's like, but it's something where it's like I still look for that. You know what I mean? Like, where it's like I'm tired of packed shows.
It is funny, like I have a lot of memories of shows like that where like I drove, like there was Philadelphia is pretty close to Lancaster, which is like where all the Amish people live, like the Pennsylvania Dutch. But there was like a club there and stuff. And so every so often there would be a show in Lancaster. It was like an hour from my parents' house or something. And once I had access to a car, I didn't have a license until I was like pretty old, but
how old are you? I gotta know because I don't have a license.
18 or 19 or something.
Okay, never mind. I'm 20. I don't have a license.
But do you need one?
Not really, but
I mean, like I didn't care about that for a long time because, like, you know, in Philly it was like I just took the train, you know, and I only bought a car for the first time in my life like when I moved to LA.
Oh, okay.
So like I was 39 or something before I owned a car ever.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know. I'm a believer in public transportation, you know.
Safe.
But I remember driving to Lancaster to see like bands that I really loved, and in retrospect, I'm sure those shows sucked for them. Yeah. Like they were like horrible shows for them, but for me, I loved it because I was just like, man, I'm seeing, you know, whoever to nobody. It's great.
Yeah.
Um, Do you? Is there anything else? I have a little more time, but no, we've gone pretty long.
Yeah. What time? How long has it been, Grant?
It's 1:18.
Okay. Yeah. There are definitely people are going to be like, by the time we're like,
I know. Yeah. Feel free to edit this down however you want. Is there anything you want to end with, or
what's the future hold for you? What's next for you? You're for context for what the question. You're 42.
Mm-hmm.
You're healthy.
I am.
You got it. You're in great bands.
Thank you.
You got a comfortable life.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say just from interviewing today, you've reached some sort of peace, some inner peace. You know what I mean? Like
yeah. Like, well, moving to California really helped with that.
that hoax line is like, I'm moving to the West to die a free man.
Yeah.
But
I heard some of your interview with Jesse and
that was crazy. That was I wish I could redo it again.
Oh really?
Just because like he was like I never seen Hulk's life, so I saw videos until I met him. Like, oh, I get it now. Like I you can only see videos of him being crazy, but when you meet him, like that's you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never that's the worst part. I never saw Hulk, so I feel like I didn't have the inner butterflies as much as I should have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I seen Command, and I was even interested when I saw Command. But
I actually it's funny because I probably shouldn't out myself like this, but I didn't really care about Hoax when they first started. I had never seen them, but I just didn't pay attention. You know, I they had the demo. There was a demo, right?
Yeah.
There was a demo in a 7-inch, and this is me. This is a mea culpa. Like, I was fucking stupid for not paying attention. But I kind of filed them alongside a lot of other black and white, record cover stuff that was happening at the time, and most of that stuff was really bad. So I was just like, who cares? And then I booked a show in Philly for Soul Swallower and I want to say maybe either Scapegoat or Mind Eraser, something like that. But Hoax played too. Like, they were like, oh, Hoax is also playing. And I was like, oh, I'll go to, and the, no one went to it was in a basement. There was 20 people there or something like that. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll look at Hoax. And from the first second they played, and there was not really that many people there, I was like, oh, this is the best. I haven't seen anything like this in 10 years. And I don't think I've seen anything like it since.
I wish, I wish I could have seen it.
And people really quickly responded. You know, they became a band just based on their reputation for being one of a kind live act. They always did really well when I saw them. Ceremony played with them once or twice. And we got along with all those guys really well. And Jesse is such an interesting and smart,
fair. One of the nicest person. Guys.
He really is. Yeah. And I mean, that was the funny thing is because, we ended up hanging at that first show and he was terrifying on stage, in this basement with all the lights on. It wasn't even vibey or anything. It was just they were so intense. And then was the nicest, sweetest, guy ever. And now I see him every so often and we live in the same city now, which is nice. And he's just such an interesting guy. You could probably do 10 hours of interviews with him.
Yeah. There's a B-side. I was talking politics that I probably won't release. Not that it's bad. It's just I can't imagine anybody being I want to see what Jesse from Hoax thinks about gentrification.
Yeah. It's really, I think that's super, I ran into him at the Academy Museum at this film screening a year or two ago, and he was telling me all about getting into the tenants union stuff, and I was like, wow, I was so impressed.
You don't have to at all, and he's still doing it. You know what I mean?
It's important work though. I mean, it's
it's very cool that it's a volunteer. It's coming from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he's a really great guy. But yeah, I'm not to interrupt again, but yeah, it was moving to LA. Sort of felt like moving to a retirement community for people like me in a certain way. Like, I go to yoga and I'm healthier and I'm because I moved from New York where I'd go out every night till 4 a.m. and all this stuff. And, it's fun in New York, but I'm definitely it's nice to be where I am now. And so to answer your question, what does the future hold? Painted Black has a record coming out this year. Open City has a record coming out this year. The Open City one gets announced next week, I think, actually.
Sick.
Paint Black One hasn't been announced yet, but like everyone knows it's coming, so I feel like I can talk about it. But both of them are like a
was
really.
Was it supposed to come out last year?
Paint It Black?
Yeah. Or am I?
Well, we recorded it last year, and it's been just really slow getting everything together. Okay. Like we, you know, we move at our own pace. Yeah. So, but it's totally done, and test presses are on their way, so it'll be out before the end of the year. And the Open City record, I'm so happy with how it came out. It's head and shoulders above the first one, and it's really cool. And actually, to connect it to Fugazi, the guy who did the Fugazi movie and all their record covers did the record cover for it. So, which like I don't think any, he hasn't really done any other bands besides like REM and like I think he did some Vic Chestnut records. So. Jem Cohen, who did Instrument, the Fugazi movie, did the artwork for the Open City record, which I can't believe.
That's full circle moment.
It is. It really is. So hopefully maybe people check that stuff out, and maybe next year they'll see Ceremony, new record, new whatever. We'll see.
Maybe.
Maybe. You never know. We'll see. But thanks so much for making it out here and taking the time.
Thank you for letting me into this really nice home.
Oh, it's okay.
Really? I was like,
but when we moved here, we looked at like, this place is actually like cheap. And I looked at probably like 50 places when we moved out here, and this was the cheapest one. So
that's saying something for where we're at. I don't want to give out where you're at, but where we're at, it's like, I was like, damn.
And I'm glad you got to meet my dog too.
Yeah. All right. Thank you everybody for listening.
Yeah.